Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. Whether you work for government or industry, if you're in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Our topic today is CBRS, so let's get this thing started. CBRS are one of these unique GovCon concepts that people and companies either know really well because they're working with them all the time, or they have no idea what they are or even what the acronym stands for.
CBR, which stands for Small Business Innovation Research, the CBR program is one of the ways the government is able to tap into small business innovation in particular without going through the traditional, meaning, you know, long, slow, expensive competitions that are laid out in the FAR.
Before we get into that, let's stop and say thanks.
Thanks this week goes to Richard Wheeler from the SO Company. Richard is the COO at SO Company. SO Company provides human-centered design to improve systems for government customers, and they support the VA as well as the DOD. In fact, the SO Company has an Air Force CBR providing research on human-centered design. I want to thank Richard specifically for being a longtime podcast listener, number one. Number two, being a Skyway community member since way back in 2015, and also continually referring new listeners and new members to us. I truly appreciate early adopters like Richard. In his case, over 4 years ago, he got on board with the Skyway community.
Thanks, Richard. What are we talking about today? You just spelled out the acronym SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research. There's also another program called STTR that is a small business technology transfer that's similar, but not quite the same. And we'll talk about that on another podcast episode.
CBR is a competitive program that encourages domestic small businesses to engage in federal research and development. And the idea behind it is to have potential for commercialization. It enables small businesses to explore their technological potential and incentivizes them to profit from the commercialization of that technology later.
So big picture, the government is funding small businesses for its own needs, but it's funding them to do things that can be used for the greater good of the economy, the country, whatever. This is doing high-tech hard things that otherwise might not get funded for the good of all.
And might not get funded, especially to a small business.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. The CBR program was established under the Small Business Innovation Development Act of 1982. And the purpose of the act was to strengthen the role of small business concerns in federally funded research and development and get access to innovative approaches and solutions that are offered by the small business community that maybe, you know, big companies aren't offering.
This program is funded by agencies that have an R&D budget that exceeds $100 million. They have to put aside or allocate 3.2%, and that's the current number, of that R&D budget to the CBR program. So it's kind of like a CBR tax on agencies that have a large R&D budget. That's where the money comes from.
3.2% doesn't necessarily sound like a big part, but R&D budgets for the large agencies can be giant. And even with $100 million, 3.2% of that is what,
$3.2 million.
Per agency.
Right.
And since CBR awards are small, generally small, we'll talk about that in a second, that actually funds a lot of contracts.
Yeah, it can really move the needle.
Let's jump into why this is important to industry. Before we really get into what it is and how it works, I think it's important to talk about why it's important. Okay.
it's important to talk about why people care about it.
Here we go. CBRS are an incredible opportunity for a small company to get a sole source or at least bid advantaged win with the federal government. And we'll get into how that works in a little bit.
The important thing here is that it's innovation-based. It's not just research and development. So even if you're not a traditional research and development company with chemists and physicists and stuff, this still applies to you as a small company, and it's actually bigger than you think. And it's an opportunity to develop technology-based improvements in your operations, products, and services using federal funds.
Yep. So it might not be purely research and development. It might just be doing something that your company would have liked to have done but couldn't afford it.
Correct.
The government is funding early stage, high risk development projects that no one else will touch. And it's at little or no risk to your company. Like we just said, the government's paying for things that you might want to do, but would find too risky to invest your own money in. But they're interested in that big payoff and are willing to spend a little money on it. It lets you research ideas, do risk reduction, and gather information that you need to get to that next level. And by next level, a lot of companies are looking for venture capital funding to really commercialize a product. Venture capitalists generally won't touch ideas that don't have some proof that they're going to work. It's too risky for them to put their money in, right? So this is the government being the first venture capitalist to get an idea far enough along that then commercial venture capitalists will come in and carry the idea farther along or to production, I guess is what I'm saying there.
It's a great way to get this stuff off the ground, get from zero to one.
And another thing we'll talk about in a minute, it doesn't come with any strings like venture capital comes with, where they generally take equity in your company if they're going to fund you big time to move something forward.
That's a whole different conversation.
It's a whole different conversation that leads us right to far time. This is the biggest, most important thing, in my opinion, for small businesses. FAR 52227-20, it's a clause, is rights and data CBER program. And it comes right out of FAR Part 27, data rights, that talks about this and says, must use this clause in CBER contracts. It says that the CBER awardee owns and has full right and title to the data it develops under a CBER award. I'm going to paraphrase, not read it, but the clause says the CBER awardee owns and has full right and title to the data it develops under a CBER's award. The awarding agency can't disclose that data for 4 years after the last deliverable, and the protection period is extended with each phase so that your data is protected the whole time you're working on a research project.
That is fundamentally different than how venture capital works and usually how most government contracts work. They get the data they paid for.
Right. Usually whoever's paying for it gets at least a piece of it. In this case, you get a nice long window to profit from something before the government can disclose it.
And that's because the long-term play here is to commercialize it, right?
At this point, you're thinking, CBERs are great. How do I get me some of that? But not for everyone. The SB is the reason. Small Business Innovation Research. Only U.S. small businesses are eligible to participate in the CBER program. So there's some criteria to get these awards. You have to be a for-profit company with a place of business in the U.S. You have to be more than 50% owned by U.S. citizens. And you have to be smaller than 500 employees. No more than 500 employees, including all your affiliates.
The key factor there is no more than 500 employees. We did an episode about NAICS codes, and there's all kinds of different definitions of small businesses.
You could be a small business and have over 1,000 employees. I think there's some NAICS codes where the threshold's 1,500 employees or something like that, right?
Yeah, but some of the manufacturing ones are that high.
Right, but you're not eligible for a CBER then.
Correct.
For all of the specific details on eligibility, we gave general ones here. For the specific details, you can go to sbir.gov, and there's a guide that tells you everything you know about eligibility. We've been talking about why this is important for industry. Let's flip it around and talk about why the government cares.
Access to innovation, right? You get great ideas. We want quick access to them. You want to shorten the path to get to them, meaning you streamlining the acquisition and award process. This is lower risk and lower cost because it's like you're throwing BBs instead of cannonballs. These are smaller contracts. The amount of time and effort it would take to award a large research and development contract to a company to say, okay, is this possible? It may be a CBER phase one to say, is this possible? Well, it turns out it's not. Okay, we find out real fast. And incremental development is huge here. Provided that this solution works, you can move to phase two. And then if it really works, you can move to phase three. So it's incremental. From the government side, it's a much more effective way to get access to innovative ideas without, like I said, throwing a cannonball. You're just throwing BBs.
This is a great way for the government to try things out without a huge investment of their R&D dollars or committing to everything before there's any proof that this idea is going to work. You know, rather than awarding a $100 million R&D contract to prove out a concept and spend $50 million before you figure out, oh, this isn't going to work at all. This is taking little bites at it before you commit like that. You may still have to commit for the really hard stuff, but this takes chunks out of the risk and proves things out before you get that far down the road. You just talked about the incremental approach. We'll stop here and explain how the SIBR program works, how the phases work. Phase one SIBRs are the startup phase.
They're usually valued at, generally speaking, at about $150,000. It depends on the agency, but that's the general rule. And they last about 6 months. Again, it may differ by agency, but the basic idea is $150,000 and for 6 months.
And these are awarded to address a specific topic area that's identified in an agency solicitation. Small ideas, right? Can you do this? Let's do just 6 months worth or $150,000 worth of work to see if this can be done.
Might be a big idea, but it'll be a small award.
Right. And we're just going to scratch the surface of proving out, is this feasible or not? The winners are chosen competitively by an agency's technical and scientific experts. Phase two SIBRs move you on to the test and evaluation phase. This is where you demonstrate that the concept that you did the initial proof on will actually work in the target environment, in the user's environment. Phase two SIBRs are awarded based on the success of your phase one contract and the scientific and technical merit of your phase two proposal. You got to do a proposal for what next. Okay, this first piece shows promise. It's working. What's next? This is how we're going to prove that it'll actually work in the real world.
Phase two SIBRs are valued, again, generally speaking, at up to $1 million, and that differs by agency, and can go about 2 years. The emphasis here is on commercializing the application of whatever thing we started with in phase one.
Right. Phase one is really short, low dollar, just feasibility. Phase two is we're going to prove that it actually works. So you can see why it's going to take a little longer and take a little more money. Phase three SIBRs move this from the lab and from the test environment actually to the marketplace. This is the commercialization. And this is where it comes out of it. Phase three, they're called phase threes, but it sort of comes out of the SIBR program at this point because it's not using the agency's R&D budgets anymore.
Yeah, it's still a SIBR phase three contract, but you're right. The funding for it is coming from a specific agency. In other words, procurement funds are being used for it. I awarded a phase three SIBR, and it was the SIBR was for making Special Operations Command vehicles lighter. And they came up with a cool way to do that. One of the SIBR phase ones was, here's a way we can make them lighter. They adjusted part of the metal on the vehicle. Ended up taking like 500 pounds off. During phase two, they tested it out and said, yes, it's actually going to work. Phase three, instead of using SIBR money, we actually used procurement money from Special Operations Command to retrofit all of the Humvee vehicles.
And the company that it was awarded to owned that technology so they could sell the lightweighted part of the vehicle to other agencies, to commercial companies that wanted lighter weight whatevers on their vehicles. And the government paid for them to develop it and to test it and prove it.
In the end, it was still much cheaper than the government doing a long, complex source selection for make the vehicle lighter, even though we don't know how we're going to do that yet.
Right.
Et cetera, whereas this whole thing got fixed in within under 5 years.
Like we were talking, SIBRs aren't supposed to be a long and drawn out evaluation and award process. It's supposed to streamline the process. In order to become a SIBR requirement, something that we're looking at, you need a topic that's pretty specific in what kind of technological problem you're trying to solve. And they're looking for originality in how you're solving it. Again, rewarding based on scientific and technical merit, not necessarily on producibility or any of those other things yet. This is just, can we get the science to work?
And unlike a traditional source selection we talk about, you don't necessarily have users involved at this point. The evaluation teams tend to be scientists and engineers who are well-versed in how this technology can work, right? The users tend to show up later when you get into actually applying the solution.
We led off with how SIBRs are supposed to be a streamlined acquisition process. They're supposed to make this easier. It shouldn't be hard to award a $150,000 six-month contract.
Shouldn't be.
Some SIBRs go through a more traditional process where there's an RFP released, a request at least, online somewhere now. And you go and you read, and there's specific requirements. You have to write it this way. You have to submit this much paperwork to do it. And there's evaluation boards, and they go through the process and write up award documents, determinations for all these. There's also pretty much instant awards on the other end of the spectrum. The Air Force in particular, and we'll give props to Will Roper, the guy that heads up the procurement and acquisition for the Air Force, for pitch days. The Air Force is awarding contracts on the spot with their credit card. So they publish, these topics are what we're interested in. We're going to be here on these days. Register for a slot. Pitch your idea. If we like it, we will award you the contract on the spot and make the first payment via credit card. Wow.
Bam, bam. That doesn't get any more efficient than that.
Speaking of efficient, we're getting near the end of our time today. But before we go, let's make sure we talk about acquisition and execution time zones. The SIBR program, it really covers all of the acquisition time zones. We have a requirement to solve a problem. And we're going to zoom through the market research zone and the RFP zone to a really quick source selection, or just say, we like that idea. Here's a contract. Here's the credit card. Boom. It's interesting that really what you're doing with these SIBRs is you're iterating in the requirement zone for a bigger acquisition down the road, right? Right. This is just figuring out are the requirements even possible to solve, right? Are our requirements too hard? And if it works out, if we prove that this can be done, then we might do a big acquisition down the road that uses some of the technology developed here.
In the execution time zones, we also cover in the performance zone, because did it work? Did phase one show us something that says, okay, let's award a phase two? So the performance element of the time zones is critical, because did this effort work? Like you talked about, are we iterating properly so that it makes sense to keep going to the next phase? Keep in mind, a lot of phase ones don't get out of phase one because it didn't, that's a bad idea, but the risk was low because it was like $100,000.
Performance is everything here. If you perform well, you might get a phase two. If you perform well in the phase two, you might get funding outside of the R&D programs to actually commercialize the product.
There you go. If you're not familiar with the acquisition time zones, we cover those in episode number 3, and the execution time zones are covered in episode 84.
Okay, let's wrap this one up.
On the government side, SIBRs are a flexible way to access and implement innovation. It's not just what you think of in terms of chemists and hardcore research. It's innovative ideas and how to apply them. The FAR is full of ways to get innovation and build on industry best practices.
It's really quite flexible.
Yeah. And the SIBR program is one of the ways that you can tap R&D funding that leads to real, tangible solutions.
That's the whole idea, right? Start them out with phase ones, move it to phase two, and then bring it into production with phase three. From the industry side, this is an amazing way to get your hard problems solved with government funding. You get to keep the intellectual property, at least for a while, and the government pays for the research. The government is paying for you to work on hard problems that then you can commercialize and sell to any customer. And it's protected for 4 years from the final deliverable. I was talking before about Air Force pitch days. In December 2019, the Air Force did their first virtual pitch day. So it wasn't just set up a time and a place, register for a slot, and come pitch to some people sitting behind a table. No, this is online virtual pitch days awarded with a credit card. That is streamlined.
Yeah, and that's easier way for the government to access innovation. It's brilliant. And remember, this isn't just for basic research. This isn't test tubes and what's going to happen in 22nd century stuff. It's about innovation. Earlier, I talked about Richard Wheeler from the SO Company and how they have a SIBR contract. And theirs is for innovation on using human-centered design for the Air Force. It's not test tubes and basic research. It's anybody who has an innovative idea that will move the needle for the overall government. There's a wide variety of agencies that use these SIBRs. Not, again, we've been talking about Air Force and DOD, but it's not just the DOD. There are multiple agencies that use SIBR programs. And if you're a Skyway community member, we actually have a SIBR STTR training video that one of our contracting officers, Troy Small, did. Just type SIBR into the search box on the bottom of any page inside the community, and you'll find it.
All right, Kevin, that's great for today. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Paul. See ya.
Okay, then, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, we invite you to check out the Skyway community at skywaymember.com. The Skyway community is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a business with government contracts. We speak GovCon. Whether you're brand new to GovCon, just got your first contract, or you're already a successful government contractor, being a Skyway community member gives you the edge. To learn more, call us at 877-884-5280 or check us out at skywaymember.com. We'll see you next week.